يلا كسر So tell me what fear terrifies. What you remember.
Wheels, procedures, that's the way you described it in terms of having all the details for catching attention to the opposite sex.
Yeah, that's what it's about. It's about attraction. It's about your aspiration. It's about you. Remember I kept saying that? Not really about rules. It's not really about rules. Rules arise here. Because in order to make a connection with your aspiration, you have to follow certain rules. But the rules are secondary. You understand? But unless you have a certain ability to attract, you won't get any. You understand? So that's where rules come in. Not because it's not a matter of you must do this and you mustn't do that. You do whatever you want to, but you're not going to attract what you want to attract. So that's quite different, isn't it? The Kriya Yoga is about aspiration. What you think, what you desire, shapes you. When you understand that, does that mean it makes sense to you? And so, the best example I can think of Kriya Tantra is frustrations. Because it's aspiration, imagining the ideal, and then bringing yourself to stand in front of it, and then surrendering to it, and then standing up again. And every time you surrender and stand up again, you reform. And in fact, the aspiration changes. After you've done 100,000 frustrations, your sense of refuge has changed, you have changed, your view of what awakening is has changed. You have stood there and allowed every possible one of your trips to go through. And then let them go to bow, and then stood up again. So in the process of 100,000 frustrations, your view shifts and becomes more aligned with bodhicitta. And that's the work of Kriya Yoga. The work of Kriya Tantra is to change a partial view to bodhicitta. That's what it is.
Yeah. You talk about the idea that you're doing it in every possible trip that involves the imagination push through.
Like you said, you're going to do a prostration
right.
And you're bored. And so boredom is a prostration. Then you stand up and then you think, boy, I really got this on. I've got such devotion. And you're great devotion. Devotion is a prostration. Then you stand up. And then, you know?
Different mind states.
100,000 different years.
Okay.
And 100,000 different things you're prostrating to. Oh, I must be almost right. Whatever. So after 100,000 prostrations, your view has shifted. Somewhere in there, you've done enough where you're just actually just there, just doing the exercise. And just with the mind open. And just saying, what is refuge to you? And so that comes closer to aspiration. Do you think your voice is upstairs? Is the radio on? Yeah. that make sense?
Yes.
Any questions about that? So, from the point of view of the writer Yeshe, the great saint and writer Yeshe Shoryo, the Kriya Yoga level is like smiling at the one you wish to attract. Smiling across the mall, I was in the city. Did it say? You know, come on, and you smile, you change the smile.
That's a real.
It's like, oh yeah, I see what I'm inspired by. And so it's not based on any actual physical experience, it's based on the mind being attracted. That's very important. So, Charya Tantra is what? It's certainly that's what occurs. The second stage is where the ideal and the one who desires the ideal actually laugh with each other, experience some friendliness with each other, are attracted in a much more personal way. The relationship begins. So you know how if you're, I remember when we were doing the ethics conference in Thin Mount, and this wonderful teacher named Kichi Liano. Do you know Kichi? How do you guys know this, Jack? And Kichi was talking about, you know, a sexual attraction as a teacher. And he said, I must admit that if somebody is really attractive and seems particularly interested in me, and my smile is a little brighter, and my speech is just a bit more witty. So, do you understand that? And isn't that true? It doesn't matter how celibate you are, or, you understand? When the attraction actually comes, where there is a closer interaction between the ideal and the one who desires, you do start to, like, put on your best show, don't you? Mm-hmm. Huh? Oh, I don't have bad breath. Like, or whatever, you know? Huh? Don't you? And at the same time, you become aware of what you think of as your negatives. Right? So you start to downplay them or try to get rid of them, right? You're on your best behavior. So you have to do something with your worst behavior. Charya Yoga. That's when you start to clean up your emotional life. Kriya Yoga is cleaning up your belief system, clearing the primitive views. Charya Yoga is turning the mind out of greed, hatred, and delusion into attraction, kindliness, friendliness. Okay? Do you understand that? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? And so, yeah, it's the purification of the negative, but the only way it's really purified is through love. Any questions? Any comments? So then Yeshe Shoko says for the yoga tantra, The pressure of the hands, joining hands, incites desire. So then the third stage, there's the yoga tantra, is in her analogy like holding hands with the beloved. And really what happens at this stage is that it makes everything in your being into an offering to the beloved. So everything in you, it becomes an offering to the beloved, and that's really where everything is purified by love. You trust the other. So there is a real level of intimacy, a non-separateness begins to happen here. Okay? If in at this point there is a feeling of separateness, then it's probably necessary to go back to one of the previous stages of courtship. Because it's not yoga tantra unless there is a kind of flow. That's the criteria. I'm referring to Patel's letter here just because I'll show you the same idea, but he views it somewhat differently. He says, yoga tantra is on about teamwork, working together to overcome difficulties and blocks, which is basically everything is an offering. Everything, and it is like Nanda offering. Charya Tantra is like Gautama Sattva. Seeing everybody as beautiful and purifying those parts of yourself that you don't think are beautiful. Right? To maintain the attraction. And so at this point, now everything is an offering to each other, to the other. And this is like Nanda offering. That's why I said that to me, the foundation work is symbolic. Each of the four aspects of foundation work are symbolic of the four levels of yoga. If you actually did the foundation work, you would perform all four levels of yoga. So the first one and the second one, there's still a lot of subject objects. And they're called the lower tantras. The third and the fourth, now you're not in so much subject object, there is more the whole dance of union, the offering to each other, seeing everything as offering to the other. Well, it's quite beautiful, isn't it?
It sounds like Rumi.
Yeah, like Rumi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most of his poetry is third and fourth. And Doug also says, working together to overcome difficulties and blocks, learning about the dance of self and others. Well, yeah, it is that, but it's also offering, sharing the aspiration, recognizing, the best way I know to describe this level is that, for example, if you think of someone, you look at them and you can't see any difference between them and you. They have the same aspiration as you. You understand? There is no separateness. You're not trying to help them or save them or be good for them or have them love you or any of those things. That is a question. That intimacy is already there. If you do something, it is them doing it. They are an extension of your heart, you are an extension of their heart. Huh? So this is very different. This is why these are called the higher attachments. Yoga Tantra and Anudra Yoga Tantra are the higher attachments. So the rules are there for a reason. Oh no, so Yoga Tantra is on about teamwork, working together to overcome difficulties and blocks. I'm not sure why he would want to suggest that it isn't just to overcome difficulties and blocks, because it's just that there is only working together, and difficulties, non-difficulties, there's not much difference. It's just whatever work you have to do. Everything is an offering. So you wouldn't be selecting out difficulties and non-difficulties. Everything is an offering. Everything is an opportunity. If somebody's hungry, you just feed them. Oh goody, I get to feed you. Do you understand? If somebody's sad, oh, I get to share your grief. Right? So because of that, this is often hampered by too much of a focus on Kriya. Chains of gold are still chains. Here there often is a post-personal dialogue between teacher and student, that is between them assuming free will. Sometimes mandalas may be uncomfortable in order to free the will. Other people's views may not be compassionate or supportive. I'm not sure exactly what he means, because the sentences are somewhat fragmented, but I think he's saying here that this is often being hampered by too much of a focus on Kriya, that chains of gold are so chains. I think he's calling Kriya Yoga chains of gold. Is that correct? Is that it? Yeah. Okay. But if, in fact, Kriya Yoga is not chains of gold, it's that purification of aspiration, which should carry on and continue on. It's just that there is no separation between your aspiration and the aspiration of the beloved. Now, in this case, the aspiration is for bodhicitta, right? In Tantra. So first you approach it by smiling at it, hoping it catches your attention. Then you hold hands with it, that is to say, you allow yourself to acknowledge your failings and love them and move toward, you know, the strengthening of your good qualities. And so that bodhicitta begins to move through even more strongly. Then at this point, you and bodhicitta share the ideal that wherever there is suffering, it will be liberated. And there isn't a sense of this person having suffering or that person having suffering. Do you understand that? So it doesn't matter where the difficulty arises. If someone is hungry, you feed them. In here, out there, anywhere. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I say? It doesn't. From my point of view, Kriya Yoga could never be a chain. Because by the time you get to Anudra Yoga, Tantra, Kriya Yoga is so firmly established that it serves as the foundation for the higher aspiration. It could only be a chain if someone feels insecure about their view being met by another view, which is part of what he says here. But he's talking about free will and freeing the will. But I don't think that there can be such a thing as free will. I think there can be universal will or partial view. I think there can be universal will or partial view. There is the will of the universe to be free of suffering. Or there is my sense of how to avoid suffering. But I don't understand what free will means. It seems like a non sequitur to me. I don't understand it. I don't understand the concept. I understand the concept of will, and I understand the concept of free. But will seems to me to be something that is based on conditioning. And it implies to me a subject and an object. Does it to you?
Existence is based on conditioning.
Yeah. See, I don't understand this, so I'm asking you.
Yeah.
What you think?
Who is defining will?
Will is that sense that I am going to do that or I want to do this. It is a purpose. It is a purpose. Yeah, intention.
No. Yeah, I don't see how you can separate that from condition.
I don't either. To me, will has the intent.
But the intent is always something for a condition.
And so therefore, how can it be free? See, to me, that's a non sequitur. It doesn't make sense. It's a nice idea, and you hear a lot of people talking about it. Just like you hear people in the States talking about the right to bear arms to protect themselves and the violence level going up. You know? It's a really nice idea. But, you know, or where you hear about parents with, before they have their first child talking about how they're going to share the child care, but you notice only one of them has breasts. These are wonderful theories. And I love the theory. But when you actually examine it in terms of what is actually possible, it doesn't work. Your will. See? Your will. Ah, person's will.
Again. Yeah. You're free to try it.
You're free to try it, but that's not what I hear him talking about. Free will. No. Like maybe that's what he's saying. But if he's talking about that, then what he's talking about at that point is belief. You're free to test your beliefs. Mm-hmm. That is Kriya Yoga. That's what Kriya Yoga is, mm-hmm. testing your belief. So either he's describing Kriya Yoga here. Or I'm totally misunderstanding him, or he's only half talking about yoga tantra. Because yoga tantra is about offering. It is from transcending the need to keep to a self and creating the bodhisattva vow as the only way to live. Yoga Tantra is when the Bodhisattva vow becomes a living truth. It is the offering, however many beings there are. And so that means that you go to each being according to their ability to hear. But that's what your job is, to be able to perform in a way, that's what you're doing. When you practice, I'm not saying that everybody can practice yoga tantra. I'm saying if one is practicing yoga tantra, it is the manifestation of the bodhisattva rāga. So then what the bodhisattva vow is that may Buddhas continue to arise and may they teach according to the abilities and the attributes of those who wish to listen. Do you understand that? That's clear. That is what yoga tantra is. It is working not from will, but from compassion for the sake of all beings. From a Buddhist point of view, it is, but it is a universal kind of will, not a personal kind of will. It's not free will. You know, it's not like I, of my own free will, or... If it's free will, then it's free of being, and maybe that's what he means. Maybe he means free of being tied to a self, but it doesn't sound like that to me. Is this interesting to you? It is very slippery around the edges, which is why it's so easy to misunderstand. It's the difference between prostrations and mandal offering. Prostrations, that the aspiration is there and you're purifying your view of what the aspiration is and who's trying to attain it. Right? You're purifying your view.
You're in process.
Yeah, you're in process of purifying your view. The view starts growing. It's no longer so small. By the time you're at yoga tantra, the view is purified of clinging to an inherent self. So you look at someone else, you don't see any difference between them and you. So everything is an offering. You know, what suffering? Any suffering is my suffering. Ask not for whom the bell tolls. Do you hear that? That is yoga tantra.
Or even being an offering.
It's a continuous offering of life to life. Life to life. A continuous action of life into life for the sake of all beings. It is, that's right. When you really do the manual offering, all you're doing is mirroring what is happening.
You're just doing what comes next.
When you're really doing the manual offering, you're just mirroring what is already happening. Just mirroring the inner and outer mandala interacting, continuously flowing. You dump it in the jewel, and then there's jewels. And if you do mandala offering, you should have a bunch of little gemstones amongst the rice and seeds. You know this, don't you? You know this? You mean I have to? Okay, we'll do some classes on the foundation. It's so beautiful. Is that interesting? Mandala offering is exquisite. Yeah, well, I'd be glad, you know, if you want to, you know, we could do it at a puja or something, so morning or something. It is such a beautiful practice. And it, really, it is yoga tantra.
Some of the details
of the music, they can sound like that. I mean, if you look at the things like the precious wheel, the precious jewel, right? Those things?
The
minister. minister, the general, the queen, right? The horse. All of those. You know what those are? Seven factors of enlightenment. Precious wheel is the eighth sword wheel. It's the balance of the energy, clockwise and counterclockwise. Using the energy with balance. The precious queen is, the precious jewel is Uranus. Tranquility. Prasada. Tranquility. Mental and physical tranquility. That's why you gave me my weight in diamonds. So I can come here and tell you. I'll put these offering bowls here. This is what these things are. The precious, what's next? Okay, tranquility. The precious minister, it says about the precious minister, it says, this is a description, he can find things under the earth. He can find things that are buried. Without harming or disturbing anything. Dhamma vichaya, investigation of Dharma. Investigation, interest. They're beautiful. They are so beautiful. The precious queen, the one who has the five virtues of a female. Now, I don't know what those are, but all qualities of females are virtues, but obviously, and doesn't have any of the eight faults, whatever they may be. They're probably only in Tibet and women, I think. But everybody say,
yes.
You're such lovely liars. But that's concentration, samadhi. You know that when you actually go into a state of one-pointed concentration, there is this feeling of being nurtured and held and loved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The sweetest embrace. Right? Mm. Let's see, the horse, piti. The horse is this color of a peacock's throat. He has all of these whirls and symbols. His fur grows and whirls and symbols, like the turning wheels of Piti in the body. The energy. And it says about the horse that he can run over a pond filled with lotus blossoms, without disturbing a thing. Which is exactly what happens with Piti. It can move and flow and take the flowering energy from the mud into the light without disturbing the pond. There's exact description of Piti. So all seven of them. The general, he directs the four armies. Sati. Four armies. Anyway, how did I get off on this? Get back. Sorry. You get so excited. And so, like, what you're looking at when you're doing that kind of mandala offering, and what you're looking at is that all of these principles are no longer personal, you know, caught up with a sense of a permanent self. You're looking at the universal attributes of all consciousness coming into being, existing and passing away, flowing and offering the continual consciousness, dancing, the mandala dances everywhere. And there is the desire to be able to bring that to everyone else's awareness. Now this is like a knowing thing we're doing. It's like they're just holding hands, you know, they're not totally swooned up next to see them. There's a joining, there is a together, a shared experience, but it's not totally blissed out in orgasm in that sense. Okay, is that clear? Mm-hmm. And you see, you cannot have this unless your sense, the sense of the self is transparent, is not opaque. Did I say that? If the sense of the self is opaque, they're not going to be able to see others as you. You're only going to be able to see yourself, right? The reflection of yourself. And you probably see aspects of yourself that irritate you, so you get pissed off at others. Does that make sense to you? So there is a whole transparency so that you don't know the difference between yourself and others. This great intimacy. Mahayoga Tantra, he says, including Anudra and Ati, those are, from where he is talking, those are false distinctions. You can really only, from what he is giving as a summary, I think you can only talk about four types of Tantra. But he is calling Ati, he's naming like the, he's naming Ati Tantra, which is like the summation of all the transcendent of all Tantra. But really, you should only, I think for the purposes of his discussion, one should only be involved with the four Tantras. Are about union, identity with the deity, other, etc. Anudra Tantra, Yoga Tantra, is about being the deity. And Yeshe Shogo says, when the arteries and nerves become altogether agitated, in the embrace. So this is not only a total union of emotion and union of aspect of view, but this is a total mixing of all identity and orgasm. Okay? Is that all right? You understand that? Where all of the winds together have totally transcended not only self and other, but form and formless. Where there is abiding, where there is no abiding. So a Nudra Yoga Tantra is Guru Yoga. It is total union with the consciousness that is continuously awakening everywhere. The sense of other is so weakened, is so weakened that it can barely last more. If you really dedicate it, it could last maybe 3 days. If you really dedicate it to a sense of other. But there is just such an awareness of the real truth of everything awakening. Pardon? Yeah. Well, maybe or maybe not. The throat is basically a non-issue. It is the mind that is awakening. The throat is just a vehicle for the awakening mind. So you're less concerned with the vehicle and more concerned with the joy of the awakening mind, which is not separate. There's only one awakening mind. There is only one awakening mind in Guru Yoga. No, it doesn't pop up. It's everywhere. Continuously. There's no place, says Guru, that I am not. Says Guru, what does it matter how many arms or legs I have? I can appear anywhere. So it doesn't matter, throat, you know. Everything is a dance of awakening. And that's a Nudra Yoga. Dwelling in that bliss. Then to make that actual and know it in the smile across the crowded room, that's up to you. For all of you. I beg your pardon? I It could possibly be, but I don't understand what you're talking about. Guru. Yourself is guru, yes. Okay? And the other point in this letter that, Anutra Tantra is about being the deity. He says the teacher, some beings may have a Mahayoga realization but need to work on Kriya manifestation. This is Kapil's view of the tantras. Others may be too stuck in Kriya to meet the other tantras. The teacher's job is to work with what is there and introduce the other realizations. This is sometimes peaceful, sometimes wrathful, and he says read energetic, and even violent, and then he says from the student's perspective. The violence is to the ego view, not to the being themselves. The powers, activities of a clear being, according to Tibetan teaching, are, remember your white Tara, peace, peacefulness, pacifying your peace, increase, he calls it bliss, but it's actually prosperity, increase, attraction, which is usually translated into power, but it's really like charisma, sexual energy, attraction, passion, affection, and subduing, which is usually translated as wrathfulness, which is to subdue. And those are the four powers which you find, which one can develop for doing particularly white Tara practice, green Tara practice, and Hare Griva practice, as well as any beginning teaching. In fact, peacefulness is not different than the practice of loving kindness. Because how does one become peaceful when everything is beautiful? It is ugliness that agitates. Compassion, feeling a sense of hatred for suffering. Okay? Do you understand that? Hello? A feeling a sense of hatred for suffering.
Hatred
is the opposite of compassion. That is to say, closing down. Compassion, when you practice it, looking at someone and realizing the bodhicitta operating in that being in a way that you would never thought would be true. Celebrating the bodhicitta, the charisma, the passion for liberation. Attracting the bodhicitta, dancing with the bodhicitta in everyone. Seeing everyone as bodhicitta. Right? Equanimity is what? Because it puts down extremes? No hope, no fear. No eight worldly dharmas. Ability to look at all things equally. No preference. What an unusual state of mind. Certainly not one that Westerners easily want to know about. Hmm?
I had such a terrible day. Oh, did you? Tell me about it. Okay, that's enough. Let me tell you about mine.
Equanimity would not be on a high on a career list of career choices, would it? Because we just love to be swept away, don't we? By our hates and loves and fears and hopes and judgments. Don't we love to be swept away? I would like to be swept away by drama and take Prozac.
I like being a North American.
Don't we love to be offended? Don't we love to be righteous? Don't we love to be frightened? Don't we love? I myself, my favorite, I love being misunderstood. I love it, it's my favorite. And I could be misunderstood better than anyone in this room. So there. Don't even try. I will. Why, I've been misunderstood by some of the best teachers in this world. We love it. But equanimity? Where's the glitter?
But with equanimity, you can see things as they are. You're totally there, you're totally evolved, you're totally present, and you're totally capable. There is nothing to change. Wouldn't that be incredible? Not dullness, not dullness. It's so hard to conceive of. For North Americans, I think equanimity is hard. Even maybe I
would imagine that preference would still arise, but it would arise as a part of the continuum of consciousness, and you would also be aware of the continuum of consciousness of other beings and their preferences, and, you know, it would just be preference. So the Buddha said, you know, when I'm hungry, I'm hungry. When I'm tired, I'm sick. That's how he described the Buddha. When I read that, I thought, man, I wonder how he described that. I was so impressed. I went around reading it to everybody I knew.
Well, you're really weird.
Look at this. It says here, when I'm hungry, I eat. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Most of us eat. Maybe the first two bites are we're eating because we're hungry. But after that, we're not even there. We're still eating. Somewhere else. A slightly different sound. I remember one time, this man, this was in the early days when there was still the bhikkhu rather than Lumpur Rinpoche. We used to call him the bhik.
I didn't
know that. The bhik. Do you remember that? Or was that just about the time you were coming in?
He wasn't too fond of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he liked bhikkhu. He did like bhikkhu. He was one who told us to call him bhikkhu. Yeah, he was the one who told us. Bit, no. We did that ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to tell my story.
Oh, yeah.
My cat. Just understand me. Anyway. And there was this man named Don Block who actually introduced me to the bhikkhu. This person introduced me to him. I was giving a lecture on marijuana and the law. Mm-hmm. After the lecture, this man came up, Don Black came up with his tall, skinny drink of water, wearing this funny kind of dress, you know, robes. And Don said, Cecily, I'd like you to meet the Venerable Ananda Bodhi. And I said, very pleased to meet you. Excuse me, CDC's cameras are waiting to do an interview. That was how I met him. So 30 years later. Oh, sir! But anyway. So Don Black, who introduced me to the bhikkhu, phoned me one night and said, you should congratulate me. Okay, congratulations. What for? He says, I've awakened. I go, what? Shouldn't you congratulate me? Well, isn't it when you awaken that you see everyone as you do? Is it a race? Or is it seeing the truth? If it's a race, I don't want to play. I'd rather be in a race for a Jaguar or a Ferrari, you know? Something that can crash. You know? But if it's a truth, I want to see it in you. You want to be separate. You want to be. One of my problems with life is that I discovered that if everybody isn't saved, we're all in deep shame. If there's somebody left out, if someone has the it, and it isn't something that is everywhere, I don't want to come. Do you understand that? Do you feel that way? If it's a race, I'm not interested. If everybody doesn't get a gold medal, I don't know. And even more than that, if we don't already have a gold medal, we just don't realize. If it isn't a matter of equal respect, everybody, some people are not under the higher power. Do you see? Nobody's a victim. Nobody's an abuser. Everybody is on. So now, me, victim abuser, what am I going to do in my dialogue? You, victim abuser, so that we come to celebrate the total joyous nature of Guruji manifesting the Supreme Personality. Christ is continuously incarnate. Feels right. That feels true. After all those other dialogues that I might have listened to, that's okay. But who are thou, that holy heart, that part that sees? Not the part that doesn't see. What is the part? So that's where the yoga starts. And that's what gets an interest in the four powers. And develops them to the point of wrath. Any questions? It's a beautiful heart. Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's so beautiful. If you understand that because there is bodhicitta, because there is the natural state is bodhicitta, then what is it that you're trying to do with practice? You're trying to move aside these two veils, like two curtains that hide the movement. You draw the curtains. One curtain is fixed view, the other curtain is conflicting emotion. And the whole of the path is to move those aside and teach the mind that focuses on the mind. Maybe you're following the Theravada tradition, maybe you're following the Mahayana tradition, maybe you're following the Vajrayana tradition. That is it. Now, in order to do that, you have to have a sense of confidence. You can't ask a question and answer. So the first thing you have to do is get rid of those parts of yourself that are continuously berating or cutting you down or creating negative criticism. That's called creating a practice of self-esteem. Every time you think you're a dirty, rotten son of a gun, then you imagine yourself there. It sort of equals things, you know? Allows you to be sort of in the middle ground or something. Isn't it? Or imagine yourself at least able to recognize that. Refuge. I, of course, just to pretend I was in the room. I did. Which one did you? I'm not sure why. I think it had something to do with being able to ride into those spaces and nobody following you. It appealed to me a lot. This kind of war going on. Really disappearing. And I would have felt so selfish. So swollen. So beautiful. So beautiful. I was after this. So amazing. And push me. You invite me for dinner and tell me a problem and I'm going to you. If I'm ever worth anything, I'm going to be worth it. Keep me honest. So I hope I can return it to you. The community that is good does not necessarily mean. I know a teacher who lives in and has a woman who's in her own nursing house with him. She's been living with him for 20 years. And when people meet this teacher, they just love him and they just love her. And after about 8 months, she picks a fight with him. And then everybody goes away and they can't stand it and they talk about her. And then they try to get in touch with him without getting through her. But she's like, great, she's right there, you know. I mean, she's like a sieve. She catches every particle that tries to slip through, you know. She's really good. And meanwhile, he keeps getting these classes where he talks about the really good teachers are the ones that test him. And he says, you know, it is very useful to have someone around you who always causes difficulty. Because if you treat them with respect, then they will be more grateful than the kindest, sweetest teacher who loves you so much. Interesting. And there's always these little political movements to get her out of there. And somehow or other, we just make her look. It's interesting. A really good community shouldn't always be issue. But there should be a shared aspiration, so you have to go beyond what you have. So you have to practice some of the higher tantras on occasion. It's true that one gets a lot more from giving than from taking. Moves your fixed views.
Are the higher tantras really complicated? I look at some books and I see all these higher things, but then they go on and on and in this, and it seems like actually they are like really simple. In one way, when you talk about them, you know.
They are very simple, but by the time you get to the higher tantras, you're actually identifying mind states. So, you know, for example, the mandala of Kalachaka, or the mandala offering. all of those different, every one of those things is like an actual mantle. You are imagining yourself going into your own mind, which is no different than the universe, and seeing all the qualities of mind as radiant energy, which it is. Oh, and this is awareness, and this is this, and this is that. And you see mind, inner, outer. You see the actual movement of consciousness in time and space and out of time and space. So that you're not bounded by the sense of self. So you need a form to do that. So the form is a mandala. Usually a figure yabhyam in consort, right? And usually three steps or four steps up. Usually three steps up, representing body, speech, and mind. And usually four doorways going into the center. The four elements, the space in the center. And in space, and that is also rising up. So it is a mandala is as dimensional as consciousness. And it is a pattern of consciousness. And it talks about the continuous birthing and dissolution of the universe. You are actually practicing the universal mind. So all the different attributes are sitting at the different gates, and this one moves this way, and that does that, and this goes counterclockwise. So the actual working of a meditation takes, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years to learn how to just do the meditation. But before you get to that point, you have to be able to know the difference between greed and hatred and delusion, which you learn when you're doing the first two tantras. And you have to learn the difference between love and compassion and sympathetic joy and equanimity, which you should also be learning, especially in the second tantra. They are not the same thing. They are not one light mixed in. They are specifically different, and that difference is important. Now, so discrimination is part of consciousness. And what does discrimination do? It gives a greater sense of joy and clarity. A greater sense of detail, a greater way to be intimate. The more detail you know, the more possibility there is. But in actual fact, you don't need any of the mandalas. And you don't need any of the yogas. If you're just able just to be present here and now, with your mind free of bias and your heart open, you don't even need a teacher greater than your presence. Guru Rinpoche is everywhere. Inner, outer. No one is there. According to the Buddhist tradition, all beings are destined to awaken. There's no way you can avoid it. You don't have to do anything. It's just a matter of when, how many times you want to hit that wall. We're all prophecies. I mean, I remember one time when my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche looked over the heads of everybody and looked in my eyes. You know, and he does that thing where his eyeballs go into his twin sons and he goes all, you know, into that other kind of, you know, Dewa realm stuff, you know, and he does one of those prophecies. He's looking at me and he says, "You will awaken." And I feel a shock go through my body and I'm like, "Oh, yes, yes, I have." And 3 days later, I go, "Huh? When? When?" Damn. He was already gone. Not this week. Well, very often I have had that experience of, oh, I should have said it, but that one, for sure. More often I've had the experience, oh, I shouldn't have said it. So now what should we talk about? Is that enough?
Yes.
Do you have any requests for what we saw that we should talk about tomorrow? Let me know. Beautiful gold lighting in here. Rest for your body, pours out for your pores, above, below, and front, and back, and back. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and the light just washes up, and every person has been gathered by the energy of it. We share it with all beings. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. Thank you for your great compassion.